Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. We've got two regular segments for you this week, and then one bonus segment at the end of the show, following the outro. Starting things off, Patrick, Neil, and Zach get together to talk about news. After that, Zach, JP, Andy, and Andrew have a segment about Resident Evil Revelations. Pretty much just a roundtable discussion of the game as a whole. And after the show, myself, Neil, and Nate talk about Chrono Cross, the infamous sequel to Chrono Trigger. Enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to the news here on Connectivity. Except there's not really a lot of news. So I'll just get this out of the way before I even introduce everybody. Pokemon Black and White 2, or Pokemon Black Version 2 and Pokemon White Version 2, are coming out June in Japan, and this fall in North America and Europe. And the rest of the cast with me today is Patrick Barnett.
Hello.
And Zachary Miller.
I just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it is the kind of thing where we were talking about this before recording, where I think all three of us will probably be playing these games when they come out, but if you were to ask me, am I really excited? Not really. I mean, it's a Pokemon game. I mean, I guess maybe when they reveal more information, I'll be more excited, but like, with Pokemon Black and White, I was super ecstatic. I thought about importing those games, that's how excited I was. You know, with all the new characters and stuff, and I mean, that was a really cool game. But with Pokemon Black and White 2, it just, I mean, the initial announcement is just kind of like, well, the hardcore Pokemon fans are really gonna, you know, they're gonna be happy and ecstatic, but for me, it's just kind of like, okay, it's a new game, that's cool, we knew it was coming, like, I didn't know it was gonna be like that.
Anyone else a little weirded out that it's a DS game?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I really care.
Well, like, just, it doesn't really, buying,
it doesn't affect
me. I mean,
me
people
either.
Still buy DSs, I know, but a Pokemon on 3DS would sell systems.
Yeah, I mean that's really the only thing where I don't understand this, but maybe their logic, too, is that you know, having it on DS means that people will buy both systems. Or, if, you know, people that already have a DS will, you know, buy the Pokemon game on DS. But it might also get people to go and buy systems. I guess that doesn't even make any sense because people, if they're already into Pokemon,
bought Black and White.
There has been literally three rounds of games out on the DS. But, I mean, I guess I understand it and that you're appealing to the widest base, but you're not going to be able to use it as a system seller.
Yeah.
Unless maybe they'll do something crazy and we'll have that Pokemon Gray game out in, like, 2013.
Mm. I think they would do new Pokemon games before they would release a Pokemon Gray.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we'll find that out more once we figure out more of what the sequel is.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
Because we honestly don't really know too much outside of, like, the legendary Pokemon involved that'll be on the covers.
Well, it's an alternate form of the legendary, and that is what happened. That's the only change. Well, that's not the only change, but that's why they made Platinum, because Platinum has an alternate form for Giratina.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know more than I do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for me, as someone who, I mean, I know people complain about how, oh, the DS games are stretched out. But for me, that doesn't really bother me that much.
No.
Like, I played Ghost Trick on it, and it did not faze me at all. I mean, I guess on some games it looks worse than others, but, like, I had a little trouble with Elite Beat Agents. I actually played that game as kind of a test subject when I got the 3DS. And, you know, having things be a little bit bigger and a little off-kilter was a little difficult, but I mean, I played Mass Attack on that, I played Ghost Trick, and I don't have any complaints with it, but I guess I'm just not that visually picky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you guys play DS games on your 3DS at all?
I played Okamiden, and that looked fine, in my opinion, but I'm probably like you, and it doesn't really bother me that much.
I have a DSi for my DS games.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thing, is, I mean, I gave the DSi to my niece, but even still, I'd rather have, you know, my time logged on the 3DS with the game. I'm into that feature. That's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like seeing, just because it's not something that I'm usually aware of, how much time I put into a game like Mutant Muds. I checked the time, and I was like, oh my god, I played this game for 9 hours? How the hell did that happen?
How did that happen? The game's about 2 hours long.
Not for me.
I don't know how you got through it that fast, Seth.
Well, maybe not 2 hours, but not 9 hours.
Yeah.
I think the very last level might have taken an hour.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we just aren't all as expert gamers as you, Zach.
Well, I mean, duh.
But, I mean, I'd just rather play DS games on my 3DS at this point. Yeah. It doesn't really bother me.
Well, now that I have that awesome 18 game case, if I want to, I can take DS games on trips with me and play them on my 3DS and have them in the same case as my 3DS games.
Yeah. I mean, now that I have two of those, I can take double the amount. And I have, but I'm at a point where I almost fill up an entire case of those in 3DS games. So.
Nice. you bastard.
Yeah. So let's get to what we were going to talk about, because there's not a lot of news. We recorded a little late last week, and the only thing that really happened over the weekend was the Pokemon news. So we're going to take this time to do a little bit of a future topic and talk about what games we would like to see direct sequels to. Really, the only rules we had lined out is that the game had to be on a Nintendo system. So my wish that I actually thought up when we were brainstorming for this is, really like to see Mirror's Edge 2. That's all I'm going to mention about that, is that I'd like to see that happen, EA. But I guess let's start with Patrick. What direct sequels would you like to see?
I'm going to start with a Wii game, Zack and Wiki. I think it was Zack and Wiki Quest for Barbaros Treasure, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. It was like one of the earlier Wii games I had actually gotten, and it was just different from things I had played before because it was like a point-and-click adventure on the Wii, almost. I don't know. Did either of you guys play it?
I actually own it, but I've never popped it in.
Oh.
It was one of those things where I realized that I don't really care that much for most point-and-click games. And I mean, I didn't really... I like the art style, but the story just seemed kind of flat to me.
Oh, yeah, the story didn't really matter much at all, because most of the game you just spent doing the puzzles themselves, which some of them were a little tricky and complicated, but overall I thought it was really great.
I've heard that's a good, like, girlfriend game.
Yeah.
I guess it is co-op, yeah. Maybe. Is it?
Isn't it co-op in the way that Mario Galaxy is co-op, though?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't remember.
Well, I mean, it is a game where you point and click, so it makes more sense than having that with something else.
Sure. But you still have a character that walks around and picks stuff up, but I don't remember how it handled the co-op.
Well, I mean, it was just like, I think you could, like, make a note of, like, oh, select this.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do want to pop that in. It looks fun.
Yeah, but I think it would work really well on the Wii U with the screen in your hand to select things pretty quickly.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe that'll happen. I think that was Capcom, so make that happen.
Yep. I have the little puzzle on my refrigerator. Nothing?
Okay.
It came with a puzzle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Should I go with my next one right away?
Do it.
All right, Pokemon Pinball. That was released on Game Boy Color a while back, and then there was another Game Boy Advance game.
Yep.
And I think it would work really well on the DS, because there's all these recent DS pinball games. And
yeah, and if you think about it, because wasn't the second one Ruby Sapphire?
Yep. Yeah, it was Ruby Sapphire, so it's been two generations.
The first one, did that just have red and blue?
It was just red and blue, yeah.
Yeah, so, every two generations. And right now we are in the second generation since Ruby Sapphire, so.
I'd love it.
Maybe. That would be cool. I would definitely play that.
I play the Game Boy Advance ones all the time. They're really fun. It's really fun.
Yeah,
and get Fuse to do it. Although Fuse doesn't exist anymore, do they?
Yeah, that is unfortunate. But there are a lot of other good pinball companies out there.
Sure. Whoever did that pinball game that you're always telling me to get, Patrick.
Zen Studios. Zen Pinball. And there's also the guys making the pinball arcade.
I wanted to tell this to Patrick. Patrick, I turned on Pushmo with the intent to play it for a long time last night.
How far did you get?
Got stuck on a puzzle in level 2. Said, screw this noise, and went back to Resident Evil.
you can get through Mutant Muds in 2 hours, but you can't get past level two of Pushmo.
That is where I trump you, Miller.
It's a surprisingly difficult puzzle, and it makes me crazy, but I don't want to do a fact because it's a level two puzzle, and how stupid am I? What's next? What else we got here? Oh, that's all you've got.
That's all I
all
have.
All right,
yes.
So I'll move on to my gargantuan list.
Your list is huge.
Yeah, I know.
You know what they say about guys with huge lists?
Small brains? I don't know.
Sure.
My first one is a game series that is near and dear to my heart. And most Westerners are people who aspire to be great southpaw pitchers in the Pacific Northwest. That is Star Tropics 3. They were the first two games on NES, Star Tropics 1 and Star Tropics 2, Zoda's Revenge. They were kind of Zelda clones in a sense, and they were basically unique in that they were made to appeal to the Western market. Right. And I really, really dug those games. They had, you know, a really quirky story, quirky characters. The first one, to me, is a much purer experience. The second one kind of goes a little off the beaten path. But the second one is kind of like time-traveling game, where, like, you go to different time periods. But it doesn't really make any sense. Like, Cleopatra really wants to eat pizza. And according to that game, Sherlock Holmes is a historically accurate person. Because when you go to that era, it's like, I look, Sherlock Holmes is here. I was like, I thought I was going through time, not fictional worlds.
Now, aren't Star Tropics kind of the Zelda games, right?
I mean, they're definitely very similar to Zelda. Like, there are dungeons that would remind you of Zelda dungeons.
Right.
Are they both on the Virtual Console?
Yes.
Okay.
I highly recommend, if you've never played them before, I would definitely check them out. They are fantastic games.
It was the first one, correct? That in the manual, you needed the manual to get through something?
Yeah, you had to dip it in water. And actually, the Virtual Console manual, if you back out and go to that section, you can do that. And when you're prompted to in the game, you can go and do that.
Which is funny. Super Nintendo games?
No, original Nintendo. Oh. Although they came out pretty late.
Okay.
Which
one's better? If I had to get one, which one should I get?
I would say get the first one. Because the one big thing in the second one that I wasn't as big of a fan of is that in the first one, everything's pretty, like, grid-based. Like, you know, when you're in the dungeon, it's like if you press left, you just move one square. And if you hold left, then you go to different squares. And it's like, you know, each thing is a grid. In the second one, they made it so, like, you have more free movement. And it makes it a little more tougher to control, and you'll get hit when you think that you're not going to get hit. Mm-hmm. It's not like game-breaking or anything, but I think the first one is the pure experience. I would recommend that if you've never played the series before to start there. And if you really dig it, then move on to the second one.
Yeah.
And not that the story is super important, but you will... I mean, not a lot will make sense in the story in Star Tropics 2. Not that it really does in general, but if you play through the first one, everything will make a lot more sense.
Okay. Well, I've got some Reggies to burn. I may as well get that.
Yeah, 500 points, man. And if you like it, then you can get the second one.
Yeah.
And then you can join me, and you'll be like, where's the third? Which is, honestly, I don't think it'll ever happen. But if I could, I would want that to happen.
They're doing it with Kid Icarus.
Yeah.
It only took 20 years.
The next game on my list is Buck Bumble 2.
Yeah.
Some people might have heard, I believe there was an earlier episode of this show, maybe it was Newscast, I think it was Connectivity, where I hummed the song, the theme song to this game, which is epically awesome. Buck Bumble 2 was an air combat game, actually made by Argonaut Software, which are the same guys who worked on Star Fox.
Yeah.
It's got a decent pedigree behind it. It was a pretty neat game. It's basically like it is an air combat game where you're a bee, and the bee has guns, and you fight other bees and stuff. It was published by Ubisoft, so maybe we could see that come back. Put it in the hands of Q Games or something. I'd really dig that.
There you go. Why not?
The next one on my list is Mystical Ninja starring Goemon 2, which I would like to highlight the fact that I would like to see a direct sequel to the first Nintendo 64 game, not the second one, which is Goemon's Great Adventure, which is a fun 2D game, but I kind of like, you know, Mystical Ninja. I thought Mystical Ninja 1's, or not one, but the earlier N64 game had a more interesting environment and story and characters. And also, while the gameplay was a little janky, it was basically a Mario 64 clone. But, yeah, I mean, it was a fun game.
Sure.
And I would like to see that. I believe the Goemon games, there was a release on DS. It was in, like, Konami Crazy Razors and stuff, but I don't think they've been doing anything with the series lately, so bring it back, Konami. Next game on the list, and House of the Dead Overkill 2, which I've actually talked to people from Headstrong Games. They want this to happen, too. I just don't think Sega has greenlit it. Hopefully that PS3 port sold really well, which it probably didn't.
Oh.
And then we'll see a sequel very soon, if it did sell well enough. But I adore that game. Zach, I believe you've played it, right?
House of the Dead? Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah. In fact, I intend to get the HD version someday when the price drops like a brick.
Yeah, if I ever find a Move real cheap, I will get a Move and then buy House of the Dead Overkill, and see, probably no other Move games.
I have access to a Move. My brother never uses his, so I just borrow it. that's how I got through Dead Space again. Whatever it's called.
Extraction.
Extraction. And so, you know, if I see House of the Dead Overkill for like $20, done deal.
Now, Patrick, have you ever played the game?
No, I haven't.
You should totally play it.
You said there's a PS3 version?
Yeah, if you have Move, because it's a light gun game.
Okay.
The Wii version is probably dirt cheap at this point, I highly recommend it. It's hysterical. It's a lot of fun. It's got great music. It's probably my favorite Nintendo game on Wii, period.
Neil, follow me along with this. You ready?
Yeah.
Agent G, he will rip your motherfucking balls off.
No, dude, it's Washington's the guy who does that.
No, that's G.
That's his name.
Yeah, I mean, it's got this grindhouse style. I believe it held the record for most obscenities at a game, and then Mafia 2 beat it. But I think someone from Headstrong made a comment, and it's like, well, Mafia 2 is 4 times the dialogue of us. Of course they beat us. It is really messed up. Like, the ending of that game is off the wall.
So wrong.
And really, really funny. The next game is probably my second or third favorite third-party Nintendo game on Wii, and that is Mushroom Men. I would love to see a direct sequel to that. Unfortunately, I don't really know what state Redfly Studio is at this point, but that was part of the whole Gamecock South Peak debacle. yeah, cock. But for those who don't know, there was this kind of like brash young, or maybe not young, I don't know, this brash young publishing outfit, Gamecock Media Group, that, you know, they were all about basically giving the ownership of the IPs to developers and kind of work more with them and involve the developers more in, you know, self-marketing and getting the word out on their game out there together. And really this great ideal that unfortunately didn't work. There's a couple really good interviews on 1UP with the guys from Gamecock, and I think there's a couple on Gamasutra too. That, from a couple of years ago when they were just forming, kind of explaining what they were about now. And there's like, you know, a retrospective explaining how it failed. But they were a part of, Renegade Kid with, Dementium. That was, I think, one of the first games that they published, but that was actually published under South Peak because they ran into financial troubles pretty soon after. And then South Peak basically just shit out all the other Gamecock games, and one of them was Mushroom Men. And it really, I mean, I think it came out in, like, early December. And I know I just luckily got the review copy for that. And I think we didn't get the review copy until January. So that tells you something about how the promotion and PR and marketing was for that game. But that's a stellar game. I would love to see a direct sequel to that. The DS one is terrible. The DS one was actually worked on by Zen Studios, who's the company who made Zen Pinball 3D.
Nice.
Which is so good.
Yeah, so they should just make pinball games and not make, you know, crappy 2D platformers on DS. My last one that I'm going to go over, because Zach and I have a repeat, is Ghost Trick 2, which I think we've said enough great things about this game on every one of the podcasts that we have on this lovely site. Ghost Trick fucking rocks. If you haven't played it yet,
I've been playing it on my iTouch.
Yeah,
I love it.
you should check it out any way you can. That is a fantastic game. I don't really know how well it's sold, but, I mean, Shu Takumi and the gang, they're still making Phoenix Wright games. I don't know if they sold too well, so hopefully Ghost Trick has enough power to, you know, take that mechanic and take it into another story. Because I love that art style and I love that world.
Do you think the art style would do well on the 3DS if it moved onto that system?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think
that rotoscoping could look amazing on 3DS.
But, I have to play the first one yet, so.
And before we move on to Zach, I will mention Scott Thompson's addition to this list, which is a proper sequel to Super Mario World. He made a comment because he had to jet right before we started recording because we ran late on a segment that you will hear later, so you can guess what one that is. Super Mario World, he thought it was a shame that the series just kind of, you know, went on hiatus more or less after Super Mario World, or at least those 2D Mario games. Because, I mean, there was Yoshi's Island, but that wasn't really a Mario game. I mean, it was called Super Mario World 2. I mean, that was more of a marketing reason for that. But we didn't really see another 2D side-scrolling Mario game until New Super Mario Bros. DS. Which is kind of incredible if you think about it. I mean, there were the GBA, the re-releases, all the different games. But, you know, there was like a 15-year gap where we did not get a new side-scrolling Mario game.
Yeah.
And now people are complaining about the new side-scrolling Mario game on 3DS is too soon. Oh, we've gotten three in the past half a decade. Beware.
You know, I will say that Mario World might be my least favorite 2D Mario.
What's wrong with you?
I really like Mario World, but...
I mean, I like it. It's not to say it's a bad game. It's just I like the other ones more.
Yeah. I mean, it's very different. For me, I like Yoshi a lot. I mean, he's a fun character in that game. And I like the secret exits a lot.
Yeah.
Some really devious stuff. I mean, the art style is really weird. It's something that I don't think has ever really been used in a Mario game since, outside of, you know, ones that use the same assets.
I think what disappoints me about the game is there's like three musical tracks.
Well, they're really good music.
Well,
I mean, I love Super Mario World and Super Mario Bros. 3, and I don't really know if I was, you know, had a gun to the head and was like, pick one, which is your favorite? I don't really know what I would say.
Mario 3.
I'd probably pee myself and then pick a random one in my head. Because the guy had a gun to my head. I need to make a decision. But yeah. I agree with Scott. I think that would be really cool.
It would.
To see a game like that.
And then when you beat it with Mario, you could unlock Luigi.
Yeah. Although, I mean, again, maybe we can just hope that the side-scrolling Super Mario game that's going to be on 3DS is just going to be, you know, Super Mario World 3.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah.
All right, Zach, your turn.
Okay. I'll go over our three-peat. Boy, oh boy, I would love to see Picross 3DS or Picross 3D 2 because, man, I don't think I've sunk more time into a game last year or the year before, whenever the hell it was.
I 100% agree with you. Picross 3D is, in my eyes, not only the best game on DS, but probably my favorite game of the past 30 years.
That's quite the statement.
Wow.
At first I was going to say 10, and I'm like, shit, I don't even know if I can really compete with it. I love Picross 3D. Yeah,
so addictive.
I don't really think you can honestly compare it to most other games, but as far as those kind of puzzle games go, no other puzzle game has gripped me as much as Picross 3D
and
has.
To see those little blocks explode in 3D,
I would poop myself.
I think it would be a day one purchase for probably all of us, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure why they haven't done it.
I still remember PAX East, that was the first PAX East. It was before Picross 3D came out. They had a demo for it at the Nintendo booth. And that was when Lauren first tried it. And that was, if you listen to podcasts during that time, I think James or someone commented about how weirdly the Nintendo booth, like you would touch a DS and you would get static shocked. So Lauren braved the static shocking and played Picross 3D. I don't know if it quite gripped her then. I played the demo too. I don't really get it. But then we demoed it at Nintendo probably, you know, 2-3 weeks before it came out, and we were fighting over who would get to play it for the demo. And then wound up, when we got the review copy, we got it, I think, the day it came out, and I just basically bought it on Amazon and shipped it to Andy, who was reviewing it, because I was just like, I need to play this game right now. Like, I will get it so it gets there to you tomorrow, but I need this game right now.
Yeah, and I'd have to quit my job.
Take a week off. New Picross is out. Sorry, guys.
My next game that I really want to see after the debacle that was Other M, and I use that term loosely, debacle.
I was just going to give you crap for it, but you said loosely.
Loosely.
So
okay. Debacle for some of us. How about that? Metroid Prime 4. Let's just get back to what works. Give it to Retro. They know how to do this shit. Make it more like the first game.
Well, they can do that after they finish their Zelda game on Wii U or 3DS.
There you go. You're exactly right. Hey, maybe they're making a Metroid Prime game for the 3DS. Actually, I think that was my prediction for what they were working on a few shows back.
Metroid Dread, man.
It's finally coming.
So I'd like to see that, because the Metroid Prime games, even 2, I don't love 2, but I can still recognize it's an amazing game.
I mean, the art style is still wonderful.
Yeah, the art style is great. The atmosphere is fantastic. The music is wonderful. Like, everything about those games is incredible. So I'd like to see them go back to that well. There's plenty more they could do. So I'd like to see that. And then the last thing I'd like to see is Beyond Good and Evil 2. Of course, you knew it was coming. I love Beyond Good and Evil 1. They've been teasing us with a sequel for, 10 years? So make it – I know it's, air quotes, going to happen, but we haven't really seen anything of the sequel.
Yeah.
And they keep saying, Michael Ansel's working on it. It's a big project.
Push back with Rayman Origins.
I know. By the way, we're going to make the game or not will depend on Rayman Origins' success. And I thought, oh, great. But I think you said before the show Rayman Origins did respectably.
Yeah, they said it was profitable, I believe. I mean, it probably didn't sell a lot, but it was also probably a realistically budgeted game with realistic expectations.
So I know that in the past, Ansel has said that the version they're working on would not run on current generation consoles like the 360 and the PS3. So wouldn't it be awesome if at E3 this year we went in to the Ubisoft conference and put up with Joel McHale?
It got worse. Joel McHale he's too big, you know, community man. He's too big of a draw. Last year they had, like, some guy that people referred to as Mr. Caffeine.
Oh.
We didn't actually go to the Ubisoft thing, but it was apparently even worse than the two
priorities.
Because you did not have the wit of Joel McHale to balance out the bullshit of the Ubisoft press conference.
Wow. Well, wouldn't it be nice if they launched the Ubisoft press conference with launch game for the Wii U and Xbox 720 and whatever else. Beyond Good and Evil 2, here's a trailer, now wet your pants.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I don't really think that's that far off, although I don't think it would be out this year.
No.
I think it would be a 2013 game at the earliest, and it would probably be delayed after that.
You're probably right.
Because also, I mean, thinking from Ubisoft's perspective, they already have Killer Freaks from Outer Space, which is probably going to be their marquee Wii U launch title.
Yeah. And Beyond Good and Evil. Beyond Good and Evil got delayed a lot. The first one got delayed a lot.
As well as probably a port of a Rayman game. Asphalt 3D Wii U.
Excellent.
A Ghost Recon game.
Dinosaurs Wii U.
I said that as a joke, but legitimately, there was also a Ghost Recon game.
Yeah, there was.
For Wii U.
That's not a joke after all.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ubisoft. They'll be there with bells on with at least 5 games.
Yep.
They will be half of the launch lineup.
They'll port the HD collection of Splinter Cell to the Wii U.
But, yeah, that's a bunch of direct sequels we'd like to see. If there are any direct sequels that you would like to see, you can write us in at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can follow my talkings on Twitter at NRON10.
Wouldn't it be your tweetings?
My writings.
All right. Your leavings.
Yes, my droppings. Zach and Patrick, if you guys want to pimp yourself on Twitter too, now is the time.
I am Z Mil. Oh, go ahead, Patrick.
You can follow me at papatch15, PAPATCH15.
And you can follow me at ZMiller1902. And while I've got your attention, you can go over to crosstalk.com and download all four episodes of the Frozen North Dinnercast. The last one was Jeopardy. You're probably smarter than my friends.
And just to remind you guys, we will have a PAX East panel.
Mm.
Unfortunately, Patrick and Zach won't be there. Mm. They will be there in spirit because they will have helped make the questions.
Mm.
10 a.m. on Friday, April 6th, which actually, it dawned on me, our panel is on the day that Xenoblade comes out in North America. So that's fun. We'll have to have a Xenoblade category, guys.
Oh, hell.
We will get someone who has played the game to comment on that.
We'll
but anyway.
Questions.
But yes, Friday, April 6th at 10 a.m. is the first day at PAX, and immediately after the show opens. So come and see us then. If you want to be a contestant, you can email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We actually had someone write in about that. So if we get more people, then we might have some sort of pre-show competition to decide.
We do accept bribes.
Yes, you can pay us off, and then we will use that money to buy you a prize to give you back. So in essence, you're buying yourself a gift. So, but we're really excited for the panel. Also, Radio Free Nintendo is having their third panel, which they are affectionately dubbing, Radio Free Nintendo, the panel, Tridux Edition. And that is at 11:30 a.m. on the Saturday, April 7th, in the same theater. We're both in the Arachnid Theater. And by the time you hear this, you should be able to see the entire schedule up on PAX East. So you'll get to see, we're not lying to you. We are legitimately having a panel at PAX East. That's when shit will become real. When I go to the PAX East website, it's like, hey, remember when I looked at this when I wanted to go to PAX Prime? And I was like, oh, man, it'd be cool to have a panel. Like, that'll be trippy. But anyway, that's about the show.
Yep.
And yeah, Zach, are you going to watch Justice League Doom? It came out today.
I know it came out today. It's on my queue. I'm pretty excited about it, although the villain roster looks kind of weak sauce.
Yeah. I mean, and they have like Cyborg in it for some reason.
Yeah. Well, maybe they have Cyborg in it because he's one of the Justice League members in the New 52, which is stupid.
Oh. What was I gonna say? But I got the Blu-ray. It was on sale at Best Buy, so I went and picked it up because I religiously. It's probably like the only DVDs and stuff I buy at this point are the DCAU things.
Did you get a little Flash figure with it?
No, I was actually because I'm a Reward Zone member, and they sent out an email saying about how, like, oh, if you bought it with your Reward Zone, you could get the Flash for free. But other than like, I got it for $15. And they had there, it was $20 with the Flash figure. And I think if I showed that I was a Reward Zone member, I could have gotten the Flash figure. But I got suckered into one of those things a couple years ago with like a Green Lantern figure. And he's just rotting somewhere
in a
box at my parents. So I'm not really too torn up.
Yeah, I've got that Chris Redfield little figurine that came with Resident Evil 5 Special Edition. And it instantly broke.
But,
instantly.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan of those tiny little things.
When we both watch Justice League Doom, we should do a segment on that.
If
you want to see us do a segment on Justice League Doom, please write in to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
You should just write into connectivity at Nintendo World.
Actually, Neil, you might like anything. That Jeopardy episode. One of the categories is the DCU.
That's where we got on on the subject last
time. Oh, nice.
Because you mentioned Frozen North and or Frozen North Dinnercast, and actually when you mentioned it this time, I was like, oh yeah, the new DCAU thing's out today.
Well, I hope going a 10-minute sidetrack.
Least, I hope, as long as it's better than year one.
Yeah, that's pretty much the barometer. But we should really end this now.
All right.
I hope people are accepting of my, at least at this point, it was a purposeful DCAU transition. I'm sorry, everybody. Enjoy the rest of the show, where we talk about significantly less than DCAU. Bye.
Bye. Hello, folks. Welcome to the Resident Evil Revelations 3D Land Cart 7 discussion. with me today is J.P. Corbin.
How you doing, everybody?
We've got Andrew Brown.
Howdy.
And special guest host, Andy Gergen.
Special guest host? No, that's your job. I'm the special guest guest. Also, it took everything I had in my being to not respond when you said Andrew Brown. I think this is the first podcast that I've done with you, Andrew.
Oh yes, likewise. I don't think I've been with any of the other guys here today. So,
oh, excellent.
Wow. We need to have a new podcast. We have to, like, for the other people. We need to have the James cast. We need to get all the Jameses.
All the Jameses.
Aren't there like five of them?
There's at least three.
Yeah,
I know there
Jones,
used to be.
Dawson, Charlton.
Anyway, Resident Evil.
Anyway, Resident Evil Revelations came out, what, a month ago?
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It came out on the 8th of February, so just a little under a month ago.
A little under a month, and we've all been playing it.
Absolutely.
And what do you guys think? Let's start with JP.
Really, I don't have that much experience with the series. The only game in the series I've put any real time into was 4 on the Wii. I rented and played decent amounts of the remake of the original and Resident Evil 5 as well. But I think this really is my favorite of the ones I've played. It managed to hold on to the whole horror thing. Because RE4 and especially RE5 turned it into more of a shooter action kind of thing. This game, there's a lot of tension there, because sometimes you're running low on ammo and you're running low on herbs and you're, like, just trying to make it to the next point. It really, I think, has a great feeling to it.
Yeah, I would agree. That's basically what the series was all about back in the tank control games, I shall refer to them as. it was, I've lost my train of thought. Carry on.
Well, I think it's worth noting that this game doesn't control, in fact, RE4 as well, they don't really control that differently than Class 4 Resident Evil. The difference is that now, well, no, the difference is the camera. Because
yeah,
in
the
early Resident Evil
the
games, there was a fixed camera, so it was meant to be sort of a cinematic angle, and then your character would always move, you always pushed up to move, but that was always a different direction on the screen because forward meant different things depending on where you were facing and against the camera. So the controls really haven't changed. It's the camera that's changed. And, of course, the aiming is considerably different as well.
I'll agree with that.
I think that, I mean, if you're playing with the Circle Pad Pro, it has changed. And I guess if you're playing with if you're playing with the normal thing, then sure. But if you're playing with the Circle Pad Pro, it controls like a normal, like, third-person shooter. It controls, like, RE4 or RE5.
I really prefer not using the Circle Pad Pro on this.
I've seen you say that, and I would like to hear your argument for that, because I have played it both ways, and I much prefer the Circle Pad Pro.
It just feels slower, a little clunkier, and when you go into aiming mode, into first-person mode, it always seems like the camera is facing somewhere else. Like, I'm looking at the floor, I'm looking at the ceiling, it doesn't default to, like, right in front of me.
And the moving of the aiming is a lot heavier, I've noticed, as well.
Right.
Even if you turn the sensibility up, it's very clunky.
And I was hoping that the shoulder buttons would do more useful things, like give me a quick turn on one of the shoulders.
Yeah,
or
is there a quick turn? Because I don't even...
It's down plus B.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been consistent through the series. But,
yeah, I didn't even know that there was one, so...
It's helpful in raid mode.
It took me forever to figure out you could switch to the scanning thing with the D-pad.
I think that's the only way you can do it.
No, you can use the touchscreen, and that's how I was doing it for a while. Yeah. And I didn't realize there was a way to do it like that, because it works.
I didn't use the touchscreen in this game at all, unless I absolutely had to.
Well, for the map and stuff, you want to look at the more detailed map.
I didn't find the map particularly helpful, to be honest.
It's got like that Metroid Prime style map with the 3D kind of thing. That's true. For me, it's made it easier to figure out where I'm going at times.
That's true.
Just roughly to get a general idea of, I need to go in that general direction, but the fact that it doesn't show where you are in the room at the time and what direction you're facing, etc., unlike the Metroid Prime ones, which were actually...
Well, the one that's normally on the touchscreen shows you that, but the 3D one doesn't.
Right.
So you can kind of switch between them if you really want to get it, which I guess is kind of funky.
Yeah.
The game does kind of turn you around sometimes. That I didn't really love that until I became more familiar with the layout of the ship.
Sure.
I got turned around quite a bit.
Oh, see, I actually thought the game, it felt very much like a hybrid of the classic Resident Evil versus the new shooter-style Resident Evil that debuted with 4 and really hit the scene majorly with 5. But
or you could say hit the fan with 5.
Yeah. I think... Generally, I much prefer the atmospheric Resident Evil, which is like the remake of the remake of the first one is my favorite in the entire series, beating out 4 fairly handily, and I liked 2 quite a bit as well. And Code Veronica, actually, I really liked as well. I didn't really like the direction they went with 4 and 5 because I just didn't want a shooter. Like, there's already shooters out there. I wanted survival horror, and they basically took it away from me. Which isn't to say I didn't enjoy 4. It wasn't the game that I wanted.
It's a different kind of game.
Right, exactly.
It's an excellent game, but it's not really the same kind of game as the ones that came before it.
So I was a little hesitant coming into Revelations, even though people have been saying that it had sort of a classic Resident Evil feel to it, even though it had the gameplay really of 4 and 5.
But it's got the atmosphere.
It does have the atmosphere, but what I found is that I actually kind of really enjoy the action-y bits of Revelations more than I enjoy them in 4 and 5, and I think part of that's just because on the handheld, I don't get the atmosphere. Like, I could play it in a dark room with headphones, but I'm not. I'm playing it while my wife watches Gossip Girl. So I'm playing it with the sound off or very low, so the atmosphere it's not really a thing. This may as well not even be a Resident Evil game. To me, it's just like a pretty fun action game, and I'm kind of liking it. In fact, that's one of the reasons I think I like raid mode more than the campaign is because I don't have to worry about dealing with the atmosphere at all. It's just action, and I kind of like that better.
Yeah.
I have not played it with headphones. I'll play it with the sound on most of the time because I just am afraid that I'll just, like, there'll be a noise indicating something's, like, sneaking up on me or something. I don't want to miss out on that, but... You know, I'll have something else going on. I'll have all the lights on. I'll have ESPN on the back.
I've always been a big advocate of, like, when you play a Resident Evil game or any survival horror game, really, you turn the lights out. You make sure you're the only person in the room or at least the other person in the room is also, like, really into it. And you turn the volume way up and you just immerse yourself. I played Silent Hill 2 that way and it scared the shit out of me.
Game is so good.
And the remake as well, the RE remake, I played the same way. I played the RE remake largely in like, 3 sittings, like, over the course of a weekend. It was awesome.
I played Revelations with the cool headphones in a hat that came with the review copy.
Oh, nice.
And it sounds really phenomenal with headphones on.
I bet.
Really, really spooky stuff.
Damn. I want that.
It's like a beanie hat with little pockets for headphones.
That's excellent.
Wow. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool. It's handy for, like, when I'm shoveling and I want to listen to my iPod.
I'm still pissed that they're, what is it, the lenticular 3DS cover thing that was out to, was it GameStop that had that in US?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it actually looked pre-orders. Quite good from the pictures, but it's unavailable at least in Australia. So
that's too bad. Do you at least have the Revelations cover misprint?
Oh no.
No.
The cover is completely redone down here, and the spine of the case actually has the official game logo with like a blue sort of aura coming
out cool.
from the sides.
Nice.
What's your box art? Ours is just the thing in the eye in the door.
It's really
having
bland.
Having only seen it in the stores, I can't quite remember. I think it's Chris and Jill in the foreground with like creepy stuff going on in the background, like a dark room or something. But I have the Layton's case since my 3DS is imported.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah,
I find the box art for this game and the title screen was all really fairly generic RE. Like the eyeball, like that doesn't do anything for me. It's kind of boring.
But, it's also not in the game.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
I kept looking out for the box with the goo inside. The eyeball goo. But, oh well.
Yeah, let's talk about what do you guys, I know JP you're not too far into it, what do you guys think of the creature design?
Boring.
Yeah, I think it's kind of dull too.
I don't mean to spoil you, but there's not a single enemy in the game that doesn't feel like a permutation of the last one that you fought.
Well, what about the lance and shield dudes? They're kind of cool, sort of.
Yeah, I guess that might be the sole exception. Those guys are kind of neat.
Yeah, I'll disagree with all of you there. I actually quite like the return to the sort of zombified type creatures, particularly the slug things on the beach. Those are just so bizarre. They were.
Was
it Mission 1-2 or something?
Yeah, 1-2.
Creepy mouth things underneath, and I was like, this is sort of unlike anything we've seen in the series so far, and this is just a new direction. It's grotesque and disgusting, and there's a segment towards the end of the game where you're against a lot of them at once, and I found that to be one of the actual scariest moments of the actual game, because there's just these alien things everywhere.
You mean when you're swimming around?
Yes.
Yeah, that part kind of was hard.
Yeah, I guess I kind of like the classic RE enemy design. I mean, the zombies are always great, but one of the good things about the zombies was they looked like they had been people before. Like, there was a very clear resemblance that this was a person, and then it became a monster. And you still had that in RE4, especially because they were closer to people than they were monsters.
It's now, a little bit in this game, though.
Not much.
A little bit.
I think Rachel might be the only one who still looks a little human.
Okay.
Rachel, I guess that's
yeah, and then there's...
I just fought that boss battle, so I'm saying
that an awesome fight?
That was a pretty awesome fight.
And then there's the one where, like, I think there's like a SOS radio
the
in the background.
Skag, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate the Skag Dead. My least, not my least favorite enemy design. Just I hate fighting Skag Deads.
Yeah. So I guess there's a little bit of it, I guess.
It's really an asshole to fight against, especially with the whole instant kill thing. It's sort of like the chainsaw enemy from the last few games, I guess.
Yeah.
I do like that they retain some speech in this game. I mean, it's not like the Las Plagas in the way that they can communicate. I'm not even entirely sure that they know what they're saying. They just spout out words that you could assume the human knew before it died. Like, Sorry, yeah.
It was just saying, that can get really creepy if you're playing with the sound on. Like in the part I played so far, when you're trying to go get the key to the communications room, and you have to fight the zombified version of the communications officer, and it's like the Mayday, and that is creepy as hell.
And there's a time, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it happened to me, when you knock him down for a melee attack, one time he said to me, "No, wait, I'm still human."
Yeah, please stop.
Please stop. That was messed up. I was like, that's creepy, but cool.
Yes, if you're human, put down your chainsaw arm and talk to me. I'll be over here. I'll give you a minute.
but most of the enemies, I felt like the just common zombified enemies, they, you know, some of them were cool, but they all, like, you fight a billion of them in the game.
Yeah.
And then the wolves... I'm just so sick of zombified wolf dogs in Resident Evil. And the hunters, we've seen hunters before. And the new hunters are stupid.
They look exactly the same as they always do.
And they're gray and they're stupid. They're predator camo. It's stupid.
And they die ridiculously easy compared to in previous games as well.
Just, that's true. Although this is the first action Resident Evil where we fought hunters.
This is true.
Yeah.
So maybe if Jill had a big ass shotgun and a bunch of perks loaded up on it, she could have killed him in one hit in the remake too.
Yeah.
The final boss is pretty cool. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
That was an interesting fight.
I liked the final environment more than the final boss, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, yeah.
The final environment was really neat.
Me too, actually, but it did introduce a few aspects that we've seen in other games that Resident Evil haven't done before, like the multiple enemies, and one of them's real, and
yeah.
All that. I mean, it's been done in Zelda a million times, but this is definitely something we haven't seen.
Sure.
Swimming's new. Swimming's kind of, it's not as bad as it could have been.
I didn't realize until very late. I didn't know until very late in the game that I could tap the B button to move faster.
Oh,
so it was very tedious for a while
there.
Third
time swimming. Oh, by the way, do this and you'll go faster. Oh, gee, thanks.
Yeah, no kidding.
I needed that before. I found that the axis would. I was expecting the axis to be inverted while swimming, so I would constantly push up.
Oh yeah, I'm sitting here.
Slamming into the ceiling and, oh wait, no, that's not the way I want to go.
What are you doing, Jim?
Yeah.
One of the things that kind of bugged me as I was playing it, and I don't want to get too heavy on the story, because I know JP hasn't finished it yet, but at this point, how far removed are we from the Resident Evil games that I've already played and know and love? Like, this has nothing to do with anything else that's ever happened in the series, as far as I can tell. It just seems...
Yeah, but the game's producer was saying before the game launched, we should have just called this Resident Evil 6.
Except they're making Resident Evil 6.
They are
coming
making
out this
Resident
fall, so that's clearly not what they're...
Code Veronica was a spinoff, too, and Code Veronica was tied pretty neatly into the series.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually pretty directly a sequel to the games that had come before it. This game feels like, aside from the fact that it's Chris and Jill, and there's a very brief passing mention of Umbrella, there's nothing that ties it to the previous Resident Evil games at all.
And it doesn't set up the backstory of Resident Evil 5, which disappointed me.
Having played every game in the series, I've even gone significantly into the Game Boy Color title.
Gaiden?
Yes. I'm not ashamed to say that. It was actually quite good. It maintained some of the original game's feel with the scrounging for ammo and barely surviving from one room to the next and such, but...
I've always wanted to play that.
Yes. Yes, it was. I think it starred Barry?
Yes, it did.
Yes.
It's a bad sign right off the bat. Barry is your protagonist.
Like, I don't know, I was, giant handguns.
When I was playing, I just kept waiting for there to be some sort of tie, like, oh my god, it turns out Rachel was actually Claire, or something. Like, I just kept waiting for something to tie back into the series, and at the end, there was all this intrigue and twists and turns, and none of it mattered to me, because the only characters I even kind of care about are Chris and Jill, and I don't really even care about them.
Aww. I wanted Wesker's name to pop up at some point.
Like,
no. I was actually expecting him to show up in the game.
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't
Wesker... We just ruined it for you, JP.
Wasn't Wesker the primary antagonist of the entire franchise until 4?
Yes.
Pretty much.
Was he in 4?
He was kind of a background antagonist until 5, really.
Okay. Is he in 5? I haven't played 5.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's a huge part of 5.
Okay, that's good.
We should... play that online, Andy.
Well, I don't have the PS3 version.
God damn it, nobody does.
I've got the Games for Windows Live Steam version. One day I'd like to pick it up for some system that I can play it with. I mean, I played with Nathan for a little bit on Windows, but it was just a pain in the ass to play it on Windows. They should just port it to 3DS.
Done.
They could, didn't they? Didn't somebody say that they to test for this and they did kind of port some parts of RE5 to 3DS?
Yeah, they ported Mercenaries.
Well, honestly, like, I'm so impressed with the way the online works in raid mode. I'd be happy to play it online. Like, I was actually...
Except there's no join function.
Yeah. Well, there's no... Well, sure there is, as long as you do it before the game starts.
Not off the menu. You can't see if other people are ready to go.
Gotcha. You have to just go into the game and hope for the best.
And really, right. I mean, there should be voice chat. I don't get why there isn't. There were a ton of games on DS that had voice chat.
Well, at least like some sort of, like, communication at all would be nice.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, you've got a microphone, you've got a headphone jack, you can just do it. It's not like the Wii where you have to worry about hardware and all that.
Yeah.
It's right there, and this game really could have used it.
I agree.
Yeah, I was just about to say, this is one of the games that really could have benefited. Like, I'm over here, quick, I'm surrounded, come help me, something.
Yeah.
But,
Andy, swim left, swim left.
No, the other left.
Yeah, Zach and I were playing this, and like I think I got really turned around, and I was lost, and finally I just drowned. And
I drowned too, trying to find him.
Before we get too far into raid mode, I would like to ask you guys' opinion on what you think of the whole scanning aspect of the game.
I love it to death.
I just kind of stopped doing it after a while.
Was that sarcasm?
No, I do love it.
I didn't like it that much, actually. I didn't.
It's
like
how
it
you
much.
Find ammo.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you. I don't know how you could possibly have enough ammo to play the game without doing the scanning.
Well, I didn't never do it, but I often forgot to do it, and I found myself frustrated when I would scan something and I would like pick up a signal of an item that was like not in the current room. It would be, like,
yeah,
that
is annoying. And it, like sometimes you couldn't even get to that room. Like,
or it's downstairs.
I would really rather they only give you like results for the current room that you're in, because I found it to be frustrating when I would clearly see something that I couldn't go and get, and so after a while I just kind of stopped messing with it. I tried to do it as often as I could remember, but I just forgot.
Occasionally,
I like scanning enemies.
It's from like the next room across for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like scanning enemies because there's kind of it's a real risk to do it sometimes, but kind of gets your blood going. I'm almost at 100%, but he's right in my face!
What do you get for 100%?
Herb.
Herb, yeah.
That's what I was thinking, okay.
But if you scan every enemy in the game, you get something.
It's like a machine part for a gun or something.
Oh, okay.
I think part of me would have liked to have gotten a little bit of information out of the scanning, kind of like Metroid.
Like Metroid Prime,
right.
You know?
I kept expecting it to happen, and it never happened. Like, I would like to, if I scan an enemy, I want to know what the enemy's called.
Yeah,
at the very
that's
least.
True. Yeah, none of the enemies are named in this game except hunters.
I mean, doesn't it feel a little weird to scan an enemy in the game? What purpose does that serve in the game? Like, in the story of the game, if you're Jill Valentine, what do you get out of that?
Apparently you get an herb out of midair.
Apparently you feed like visual information into a handheld computer, and it poops out an herb for you.
That's a 3D printed herb.
3D printed herb.
Fancy solar city with their outer space solar laser thing.
That's so stupid.
You can make herbs out of thin air. Why not?
The basis
in 2005. Why not?
The basis for the story is so
it's terrible.
Oh, by the way, there was this floating city they built in like 2 years.
This happened like eight years ago. Yeah, nobody mentioned this at all in the other games. This kind of happened.
That's another thing I want to bring up.
Cliches?
I hate every cast member in this game except Jill, and I don't even like Chris all that much in this game. But
I never really liked Chris.
Parker is like the worst partner in the world.
Jessica is
a bitch.
The worst partner in the world.
And that dude with the red hair is a... Wow.
Oh, yeah. Raymond.
Raymond.
Alistair.
Right. And then the two kind of overseer guys are stupid, too.
What's his name? Jackass?
Oh, Jackass and Quint and Grinder.
So
they are the worst characters in the series.
I tried to shoot him many times. I was dismayed when it didn't work.
I just found the story to be nonsensical. Like, it didn't...
I understand, that's Resident Evil.
No, it is. I think part of it is, like, it's... too difficult to easily translate from Japanese where it might make more sense.
I don't think it could, even if you played this in Japanese, I don't think it would make that much sense.
I played the remake, and I think the remake made a lot of sense. I think the yeah. remake told a really good story. And I think Code Veronica did too. I was really into the story at Code Veronica. 4 I thought was a little confusing. I don't remember loving the story in 4 by the end. But
there was a lot that went unexplained in 4 that annoyed me a little
bit. I think in 4 I was still just sort of also waiting for it to tie back to the previous games, and it didn't nearly as much as I was thinking it would.
It actually barely did at all.
Yeah.
Until the very bitter end of the game when you find out who Ada's working for. You're like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I need to at this point assume that the Resident Evil story from the first few games is at this point done.
No more viruses.
But I want to say that, I mean, it's been a long time since I played it. I think I played it in like 2003, but Code Veronica, I think, ended on sort of a cliffhanger.
Well, it ended with Wesker stealing a sample of the T-virus, beating Chris up, and running.
Well, I want to say it ended with Chris and Claire on a helicopter, like, saying something to the effect of, we're going to take the fight to them.
Right, and then the Umbrella Chronicles took care of that.
Oh, did it? Okay, I never played that.
Oh, really?
If you can get past the fact that it's a rail shooter, it's a really good game.
It's a really good rail shooter.
Like, yeah.
Resident Evil encyclopedia of everything.
Oh, it is. That's true. And the last mission, Andy, is Jill and Chris taking it to Umbrella's Russian branch, like their last stronghold. It's pretty awesome.
No kidding. I borrowed it from a friend, and I played the first mission or two, but I got bored with it because it was a light gun game, and I just didn't. I wasn't.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It also doesn't help that the first game they put you in is Resident Evil Zero, which is the worst of the old Resident Evil games.
Right.
Really?
Oh yeah. I know you like Rebecca, but come on, the dude, so stupid. My gosh.
I never finished.
And he
Zero
never
either.
Shows up again.
Oh, that Billy Cohen. I just assumed Billy he Cohen. Died in the woods.
Yeah.
He got eaten by Lisa.
Let's talk about raid mode a bit. Like, what do you guys think of raid mode? Have you put any time into it?
I've put a lot of time into it.
I haven't played any of it yet.
I have cleared the first 6 missions, I think.
Okay.
I'm at level 50 with a red name, and I have S's on everything.
Well, aren't you just something else?
And I've completed 127 missions. It's so great.
Zach was instrumental in helping me blow through, like, 10 missions very quickly. With his one kill.
It was funny, Andy, because I'd see you, like, emptying your magazines into a monster, and I just walk over there with a magnum and shoot it in the head instead.
Yeah. I love raid mode. I love – one thing I really, like – I love the fact that you can see the level of an enemy and also how quickly its health is draining. And when I got used to that, and when I went back to the campaign, I was really annoyed that it wasn't there anymore.
Oh, me too. I'm going through the campaign again to get some bonus stuff, and I can't stand it.
I have found occasionally that the health bars above the enemies do occasionally get in the way when you're trying to line up that perfect headshot or whatever. I'm like, but for the most part, being able to see just how many shots an enemy will still take before it's dead is very useful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I think some of the raid mode missions get a little too bogged down in puzzle solving. There's that one where you have to adjust the steam coming out of the pipes.
That one is just a bitch.
Yeah, and you have to get the right – there's two different switches, and they both have to be on the right setting to get – it's the steam turned off, and I mean, maybe it's easier than I was making it out to be, but I messed that thing for probably like a half an hour before
I
stumbled across the right one, the right combination of the switches.
Do you?
I want raid mode to not have any puzzles. I want raid mode to be a straight up action.
Well, they took out the screwdriver puzzles from raid mode.
Yeah, they did.
Yes,
thank God.
I found those actually kind of fun.
If you guys and our listeners want to know the quick and dirty on that steam puzzle, you go into the you go and turn the first nozzle that you can turn, and that'll turn off, the steam downstairs, right? Then you go downstairs and you work your way back up to the second upstairs nozzle. You turn that, and then you run to the other side of that same room, turn the first nozzle again, and then you're good.
Okay.
Okay, that was too fast to write down. I'll just listen to it online.
Okay.
When was
first nozzle, second nozzle, first nozzle again.
Nice.
I just didn't. Yeah. I don't want to have to bother with that in raid mode.
Me neither.
I thought that was a bit much on the puzzle solving. I want raid mode. I want to be just running around, shooting monsters, trying to get to the end.
Yeah.
By the way, those little blowfish thing in raid mode. I think there seems to be
yellow,
one per mission.
The yellow porcupine fish.
Yeah. What the hell are they? What's up?
They're just a bonus monster. You get them for. I think you get them when you clear certain rooms. And there are some missions where you'll have to kill a certain amount of them.
Huh.
But okay, because they're rare, those missions are harder to do.
I just saw nothing at all like that throughout the entire campaign mode, and this was just unique.
Yeah, they're kind of like the golden Harry Potter thing. Snitch?
That's
golden
the
snitch.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I really like raid mode, and once I got it online, I liked it even more. Although, oh wow, I have a problem with some of the raid mode people. I've been trying since I unlocked it to get through the ghost ship, which is the bonus mission at the end of raid mode that's super hard. And you clearly need two people, and they both clearly have to be at level 50 to do this.
Wow.
And, so I see somebody online who's at level 50 and is ready to go with the ghost ship. I go to the game with them. They drop their level down to level 1, start the mission, and hit the first fake level-ending medal right away.
What?
Every time that's happened to me, nobody has done an actual ghost ship run, and it pisses me off so much.
Wait, why will...
Why?
I'll tell you why people are doing it. They just want to rank... They just want to build up the number of people who they've met online, which lets you unlock a mission.
Oh.
Ah. Yeah.
I'm not there, Zach, but I'm halfway there, so...
All right, we'll do a ghost mode run when you hit level 50.
Okay.
Sure, I'll be up for that, too.
Nice. We'll rock it. It's really hard. Like, the enemies start out at level 1, and you kind of go through the whole ship, and they build up to level 50, but they all do the same amount of damage, so a level 1 enemy will do as much as a 50.
Oh, wow.
And it's really hard.
Wow.
Sounds good. Sounds cool.
And there are almost no pickups during the whole thing. So, yeah. So there you go.
Excellent.
Wow.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
Everyone should play it. And you don't need the Circle Pad Pro with it.
I agree.
I like it a lot.
I'm not paying $20 for it. That's crazy. If it had been bundled for 5 or 10 extra, I might have gone for it. But I'm not paying $20 for it. No way.
I paid 30.
Who paid 30?
Well, wow. Because shipping to Alaska is not cheap.
Well, I just gonna get. Oh, I forgot. You won't go to GameStop. Never mind.
Nope.
Why didn't you just go to your local Nintendo World store in Alaska? They have one of those there, right?
Yes.
I'm sure they did.
No.
Yeah. All right. All right, guys. I'm going to go.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
Yep.
Ciao.
We'll see ya. Bye.
Bye.
All right, and that will do it for this week's episode of Connectivity. Thank you very much for listening. As always, you can send us listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. If you get a chance, if you rate and review us on iTunes, we would love that. And again, you can stick around after this outro here to hear a bonus segment about Chrono Cross. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week. Hello, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson, and today I'm joined by Neil Ronahan.
Hi, hi.
And Nate Andrews.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Chrono Cross, the, the not-so-loved sequel to Chrono Trigger. I had just played it recently to completion for the first time. Neil played it a long time ago, and just sort of refreshed his memory a little bit. And Nate, I think, are you playing through it the first time right now, Nate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I considered getting it, like, a long time ago, but this is my first time.
Yeah. So, Chrono Cross. Very hated.
Is it, though?
I think it is.
I think it's misunderstood.
I'd say it's divisive, yeah. Because it seems like there is a good component of people that really like the, you know, the battle mechanics in it, which I think are really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people are turned off by the story, but I think there are also people that kind of enjoy the story, me being one of them. Although I do kind of completely understand complaints where people say that the story of Chrono Cross is like fan fiction gone awry. and I mean, that is the kind of thing that's like, when you hear everything that happens in the game, it does kind of give off that vibe. But for me, and we'll get into this more later, like, I always really enjoyed the story of this because of just the random places it takes the story. And it doesn't really make that much sense, but I think it's fun that way.
Right. It kind of, we'll talk about the story later, but it does kind of leave you guessing most of the game. And then at the very end, there's like a scene where everything's sort of explained to you and you're like, oh, okay. But yeah. During it, you're kind of just along for the ride. You don't really know what's going on.
So I guess for this first part of it, you're probably okay if you don't want to be spoiled, but I imagine that as we get later into this segment, and I assume we will note this, hopefully in show notes and in the actual audio of when we get into spoiler territory.
Yeah, I would just assume that if you don't want to be spoiled at all, you probably shouldn't listen. Because yeah. I think the real spoilers will come later, but things are probably going to be dropped in here and there. So if you don't want to be spoiled on this 12-year-old game, I would skip it, but then again, if you haven't played the game, none of this is probably going to make sense to you, outside of a few of the ties to Chrono Trigger. So, yeah, so I don't know if it'll be spoiled that much. But I want to talk, before we go to story, of just sort of the mechanics of the game, and as well as the, sort of the visuals and the music from the game, as I find both are, very well done.
Playing
it again, I was surprised at how great it actually looks, considering it's a PS1 game.
it's funny, because when I was playing it again, I was like, wow, this looks really shitty. But it is a PS1 game, so it's okay.
It impresses me as far as a PS1 game goes.
The art style is really not that bad. I mean,
really
it is the kind
lush.
Of thing. Yeah,
it is,
like,
yeah.
Like, I wouldn't say that graphically it's good. Like, I mean, but that again, it's a PlayStation game from the year 2000. It's,
yeah.
You know, 12 years old at this point, three generations ago. But, you know, the character design, which I think Toriyama, the Dragon Ball guy who also famously was a member of the Dream Team for Chrono Trigger,
mm-hmm.
I think he did some of the character designs for this, but it's less apparent than it is in, like, the Dragon Quest and Chrono Trigger stuff he did, mainly because those were in 2D.
See, I thought he didn't have anything to do with this
one. I think he did.
Mm.
At least a little bit.
Maybe. I'd have to double check.
I go on about explaining things, and I have the Wikipedia page open. I'll research this.
Yeah, I just think the whole art style is very impressive, and just little touches here and there. Even when, like, the battles load, you know, sometimes, like, let's say you're in a dungeon, there'll be spiders that run across a wall or something as the camera's, like, zooming into the fight and stuff, and just these little touches, and the characters are highly detailed during battle, and even on the map screen, and while you're navigating, navigable space. But due to what they were trying to do, the game constantly drops frame rate, especially during battle. I mean, like, it will just chug at times, like, just horribly.
All right, I stand corrected. Toriyama had nothing to do with it, although
I'm
reading a little bit about how the artists from the game did, you know, take from Chrono Trigger a little bit, so that's probably where the similarity comes from.
Yeah, there is some style that's replicated, but then again, it even too kind of goes off in its own direction.
Yeah.
So I think the characters look better in Chrono Trigger. They're a little more memorable to me.
Very true.
Well, there's some good designs. Like, there's, like, the alien Starkey.
Yeah.
He's pretty cool.
Like the Pikmin-like guy that's, or Olimar, rather.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think the one thing that kind of kills the memorable characters in this game is the fact there is, you know, 40-something of them.
Yes.
There are a couple characters that are really well-defined, and they are good characters, but, I mean, it's that Suikoden conundrum of, you know, you have the series where there's always a ton of characters to choose from, but that means that, you know, a lot of characters are, you know, you don't really care about them.
Right. And that's a big problem with this game, and I've written about it before, like, when I did the write-up when we were doing, like, the top Super Nintendo games, and I wrote about Final Fantasy 3, /6, I wrote that, you know, it's got a fairly large cast, but every character's, like, well-developed, and you get their backstory, and you really know, like, why they're in your party to begin with. But with Chrono Cross, I mean, they just go overboard with, yeah, like, over 40 characters that just you randomly meet, and they're just like, okay, I'll come with you. And that's it.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to play the game through twice in order to get everything.
Yeah.
I do love the instances throughout the game where, well, there's Kid, who's an essential character, to the point where you can reject her from coming to your party, but she will still be present at most of the game's events.
Yeah, she'll just show up.
And then you do have stuff where, like, you can get Potial in either of the two dimensions, and it's like, if you ignore one character, then that opens up another character later. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff like that, that actually, when I did sit through and play this game, I had a list of all the characters, and just, like, when you could obtain them and when, and, like, if you ignored this one, would you get that one? Because I just wanted to, you know, see what all the options were. And, I mean, it's incredible how many different characters you can get in this game.
Yeah. And you're right, all different situations. Like, some you do have to ignore, and then that lets others into your party. Like, even right in the beginning with Kid, if you reject her the first time, then the girl from your village will join
yep.
your party.
Lena.
Whereas if you... Yeah, Lena, exactly. Whereas if you don't reject Kid and she joins your party, like, that's it. You never get Lena again. Like, that's
yep.
one opportunity. So it's just kind of... It's interesting, I mean, but just way too many characters... I mean, to the point where people were joining my party, and I never looked at them again after they were there. You know, I had a few favorites, and as I put along, like, I would occasionally meet one who looked cool who I wanted to incorporate into my party. But, I mean, I used at most 6 of the, 40 characters.
Yeah.
So it was just, I don't know why they decided to do that. It was just way overboard.
I mean, I could see, you know, having a lot of characters kind of works out. I mean, it does give you that variety of, like, you know, if you like the design of a character, then you can use them. But also the
right.
way the game's story flows, and we're getting into spoiler territory here if you haven't left already. But when Serge switches bodies with Lynx, you know, like probably, I guess, like 8 hours in or something like that.
Yeah, probably about a third of the way through.
Yeah. Then you basically have a whole new cast because, you know, you switch bodies and people don't think mm-hmm. that you are Lynx. They think
right.
that
you
are Serge.
Yeah, so you have to build a whole new, yeah, reserve of party members.
Yep.
Yeah, and so that sucks too, because, yeah, you'll get attached to these characters, and then, like, they're all taken away from you, which is a cool idea, but then it's not till much later in the game that you get everyone back, and it's just, like, I don't know, it's just kind of pointless.
Yeah, and then at that point you have all these characters.
Yeah, and then, yeah, now you've got your new ones that are your favorites and your old ones that are your favorites, and your party's only 3 people and Serge has to be there. So yeah, there's only so much you can do. Now, the second time you play the game, you do get an item if you do a new game plus that you don't have to have Serge in your party.
Oh, that's cool.
He's still on the map screen, but you can have 3 different characters come in, during battles. So I guess there's that, but still not very useful. The combat in this game, I think is very interesting. Rather than just typical, you know, select a move, perform that move, and then wait till you get another turn, they try to make it sort of more of an active system, where basically you have stamina. So you've got, I think, 7 points of stamina.
Yep.
Or maybe it's 8. But yeah, I think
no,
it's 7.
7.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you can do light, medium, or heavy attacks, which drain your stamina in different ways, and then you can also perform magic attacks, which completely take 7 stamina. But what you can do is you can... You know, attack till you have 1 stamina left, then cast a magic spell, and then you'll just be at -6. So you have to wait a little longer before you can come back and
yeah.
attack, but it allows you to do a lot of damage, you know, in one round.
Yeah, because theoretically, you know, you could do, like, 2 normal attacks, and then, or even you could do a string of light attacks, and
yeah.
then just kick it off with an elemental attack.
Yeah, right at the very end, yeah. And then just take yourself into the negatives, but yeah, get a whole lot of damage. Also, to use your magic attacks, you have to build up your grid,
Mm-hmm. Which basically, yep. your grid goes up to, I think it's 8 levels, and every time, maybe it's even 9, and every time you attack, you, like, let's say you do a light attack, which is worth 1 stamina, well then you get 1 point towards your magic grid.
Yep.
Now, if you do a heavy attack, which is 3 points of stamina, you get 3 points towards your magic grid. So you have to build up to do your bigger special attacks. It's just kinda cool, there's a lot of strategy there, not to mention that you can equip yourself with any magic. So you collect them, and it's basically sort of like materia, where you just slap whatever you want into your grid, with a few exceptions where, you know, like, the most powerful summons, you have to be that innate color. So if you want to cast, like, a water summon, your character has to be a water innate.
Yeah, and isn't there the stuff where, like, you know, you have these different elements, and these elements are different levels that would then, like, so it could be, like, a level 2 attack, but you could put it at level 4.
So it'll do more damage, right?
Yeah, or, like, it could be a level 4 attack, but it'll be at level 2, but it won't be as effective.
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of cool. And if you equip it on a character who's that innate color, it does more damage.
Yep.
And then
the field.
Right, I was just going to say that, too.
Okay, yeah, you explain it. It's fresher in your mind.
So also, when you start a battle, there's field color, which is basically 3 different elemental colors. So black, red, white, blue, green, yellow, any of those. And then as you cast spells, you shift the field color. So if you cast a red spell, well, now you've added a red color to the field. And if you cast 3 red spells in a row, the field becomes all red, and then red attacks do extra damage, and then you can also cast your summons at that point. So you can't just cast your summons anytime you want. You have to completely shift the field color to the color of the summon, so which requires strategy, because your enemies also affect the field color. So you could use 2 blue attacks, be ready to do 1 more so you could use your summon, and then the enemy casts a red attack, and then you have to start all over, and you have to cast 3 more.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool, and it requires some planning. It's annoying sometimes. You'll be there just ready to use your summon, and then, you know, the enemy uses a spell and shifts the color, and it messes up everything, and then you gotta kind of start over with that. But it's neat. It's just a cool idea, and unlike anything that had been done at the time, or even really since, I guess.
It's a really awesome system, in all honesty.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've really seen a game do anything similar to it, and it's probably the best part of the game outside of the music, which is phenomenal.
Right.
And one last thing about the battle system is at the end of every battle, it gives you the option to, like, heal everyone using consumables or not using consumables. So instead of, you know, after a fight, having to go to the menu screen and casting cure or heal on everyone, at the end of the battle, you can just be like, all right, you know, if I have magic ability or elemental abilities to heal, just use that at the end of the battle to heal everyone that got hurt.
Which is so awesome. Yeah. It keeps the game moving so quickly between battles.
And it's really a forward-thinking thing, too, because I don't really know if any games kind of did that back then. I mean, now a lot of that streamlined experience is key. I know in Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, it's the kind of stuff where, you know, you collect all this random shit, but when you go to a town, it'll just be like, sell crap. And it'll be like, you know, like how in, like, you know, Elder Scrolls games, how you'll be collecting, you know, all these random books and like gear that you're never going to use and goblets and stuff like that. Whereas in Reckoning, it just streamlines it all. But that's still a new concept. And to have something like that in an RPG in 2000 is pretty neat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It very, very forward thinking and just very, inventive, really. And it does, it keeps the pace going. It keeps everything moving along, which is great. Another thing too, but, and then we'll move on from combat. But the leveling system. Now, when you beat bosses, you gain stars, which increases your like your magic grid, your element grid. And then you also, all your characters get like a base improvement in stats. So they'll all get like increases in health and magic resistance and strength and all that. But after a boss battle, as you're fighting more regular enemies, whoever's in your party will gain little like incremental stat boosts. So after a boss fight, let's say you're fighting some other enemies in a new area, after a fight you might get like +1 to your health, or maybe you'll get +1 to your strength. And so what that does is it keeps everyone in your party generally close and useful, so you can switch at any time, but it kind of encourages, I guess, playing with more characters, or even just sticking with a party that you know you're going to want to stick with, because then those members are, you know, increased a little bit extra as you're using them. And it's just kind of neat. There's no experience points, there's no real, you know, sense of grinding. You just kind of use them, and then you gain little boosts.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, just interesting. Let's talk about the music for a second, because it's awesome.
It's amazing.
Nate, game music is kind of your thing. Do you have anything you want to say specifically about the music?
I think it's probably Mitsuda's best work. It's kind of like Chrono Trigger. There's some similar themes and stuff.
Yeah.
But if you compare the two, Chrono Cross is just so much more organic and flowing.
Yeah.
And a lot more natural sounding, I guess.
Yeah, and I feel like it really hits on this like Mediterranean kind of setting.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Like it fits this aquatic island atmosphere very well, I think. And then it's also very like solemn at times.
The overworld theme is very like detached.
Yeah.
Kind of just like something out of time.
Yeah, it really like it creates this whole mood which really fits the game well. You know, there are some heroic tracks, but for the most part, it is very, like, introspective and, yeah, just sort of, like, even kind of mysterious at times. So I love it. You'll hear a lot of this, at least a few selections of this throughout this episode, so hopefully you will enjoy that. But let's move to the story. That's the real bread and butter, and that's why this game is sort of despised, because the mechanics are all there. It's very inventive, but this is where things kind of hit the fan for people.
I guess should we just like explain the story? How can we do that? Like keep it to a paragraph.
Five words.
crazy, insane, bullshit stuff.
Everything you did was wrong. Let's just try here. We'll do this as cohesive as possible. So, in Chrono Trigger, you basically change history to prevent Lavos hatching in the center of the Earth and destroying humanity as we know it. Now, in Chrono Cross, and this isn't apparent at first. This kind of comes later in the game, definitely in the second half and very much near the end. This begins to become clear. But the actions of the heroes of Chrono Trigger basically created this new future, and sent Lavos and Shala, which was Magus's sister, like through this like time vortex where they became one. And
it's like the what is it the beyond time or something?
Yeah, I think so.
And they become the time devourer.
Yes, yeah. So they fuse in this like time vortex, and they become the main villain. And so they're sort of just waiting. Biding their time. Meanwhile, the humans created Chronopolis to like study time and learn more about changing time. And this is where it gets so weird. So they basically brought the reptites from Chrono Trigger from the past to the future, and then subjugated them and tried to like kill them all. And they became the dragons in Chrono Cross. And you think the dragons are the good guys as you're playing and they're kind of helping you along and sending you on your quest. But then once you free the dragons, it turns out they were the reptites who hate the humans and, want vengeance for having to live and, live that way for this long in subjugation. So then they want to destroy the earth and everything, and then you have to fight the dragons. Yeah. That's part of it, and then your main characters.
So there's all this stuff with Surge, where he's the main character, and when the game begins, I think he has like a messed up dream or something, and then, he wakes up in the island town, and it's, the typical RPG trope, and then he winds up going to a beach and then goes into an alternate reality. I forget, why is there an alternate reality?
He's just on the beach, he's on the beach and he hears someone like saying his name, and then it just happens. It's just triggered.
What's the difference between the two alternate realities?
Well, one's where Serge lived and one where Serge died.
And the whole thing with that is that, at some point, Serge was attacked by a panther demon. And then, I guess in one, he just drowns. And that is a Lynx, who's this panther villain. That's his doing. And in the one where he survives, at some point, Serge is attacked by a panther demon. Mm-hmm. And then his dad, Wazuki, takes him on a boat, going to, I think Marbol or something.
To one of the other cities
in the world to, get help. And while he's on his way, you don't find this out at first, but you come to understand that while Serge is crying, he's a young child at this point. Shala, I guess, hears him or something and then causes this giant storm to happen.
Yeah.
And in the process, ends up healing Serge, because they're exposed to, what is it, the Dragon Tear, the Frozen Flame, or whatever the MacGuffin is.
Yeah.
And then Wazuki, Serge's dad, is then he's corrupted by this, and he's turned into Lynx, who is the villain for the first part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's all feasible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just all over the place. And I guess Serge was meant to die, like in the main storyline.
Yeah.
I think he was supposed to drown. But actually what stopped him from drowning was Kid.
Yes. I just noticed that on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Right. She travels through time and prevents you from drowning, which then creates these split universes, where one where you were supposed to die and one where you didn't. Yeah.
And then Serge becomes the Arbiter.
Yeah, what happened is they land at Fate.
And
yeah, it gets so crazy. So they land at Chronopolis when he's still hurt. That's where the storm brings him and his father. And that's where he finds the dragon, the Frozen Flame, and is healed. But they land at Chronopolis and he enters this room, and because he's the one to enter it, he becomes like the Arbiter. He becomes the only one who could open that room again. And this is a protocol that's actually carried out by Robo from the first game.
Yep.
Who's had his memory put into this big supercomputer by Luca at some point.
Yeah. And they refer to him as Prometheus, which is it was his name at some point in Chrono Trigger, if memory serves me correctly.
Yeah. So that's why later Lynx wants to switch bodies with Serge, so then he can open the door and get to the supercomputer, mother brain, I think is what they even call it.
Yeah. Also a tie to Chrono Trigger, because the computer in the future in that is called Mother Brain.
Yes.
And then, I guess how Luca goes into all of this is there's a few times throughout the story where you see, the ghosts of Chrono, Marl, and... Is it Marl or Marley? I never knew that. I always called her Marl.
I always said Marl, too.
Yeah, Marl and Luca. You see, the ghosts of them periodically throughout the game. And... you don't really know what happens to Chrono and Marl. It is presumed that they got married, and then they probably eventually died. It's not really known too specifically, and I think, who's the guy, what was it, Masato Kato or whatever, who, I probably butchered his name. I think he's the guy who is the planner behind this, and he also worked on Chrono Trigger.
Mm.
And he says that, that just wasn't relevant to the story. That's why we never heard that, about what happened to Chrono and Marley. Or Marl, whatever, I don't know. But Luca, as you find out, and there's actually, there was an end, or at least a scene added to an ending in Chrono Trigger DS, which makes this officially canon. So, haha! Chrono Cross really happened, but, I guess Kid is a clone of Shala,
yes.
And she is sent by Balthazar, one of the gurus.
Yeah.
From Chrono Trigger, who was presumed dead at the end of Chrono Trigger, but I guess not.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent Kid to Luca for Luca to raise and be involved in this thing called Project Kid, which I guess, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, how does this ever make sense? It reminds me of in Skyward Sword, how it's like, you know, the minor Skyward Sword spoiler, how like the, well, I guess I'll say it in vagueness, how there's like these two different, completely different things set up that were supposed to save the Earth if things went wrong. And in this, it's like, how does Project Kid, it's just like, on the off chance that like Lavos and Shala fuse, we're gonna send this kid to Luca, and then that kid's gonna grow up and then go back in time and save Serge, who's then going to go and unleash the dragons and make everything really bad, but then fix it at the end.
Yep, exactly. So it's a whole big deal. It's a little less confusing than how we're explaining it, but it's still not very much clear. and to me, the one downside about it, because I find the story actually kind of interesting, the one downside is that it's a mystery to you until pretty much the very end of the game. In the beginning, you're just kind of doing your thing. Oh, you're in an alternate dimension. You got to get home. You know, that's all straightforward. And then the body switching happens. And then it's just kind of like you're going through the motions and you don't really know why. Like you're kind of jumping from dimension to dimension. And I mean, yeah, you're trying to get your body back, but then you end up at Chronopolis and you meet Miguel, who is Serge's dad's friend who got stuck there like, when all that
Lena's
stuff
dad,
happened.
I think.
Oh yeah, it is Lena's dad.
Which,
you're right.
Lena's like is Serge's childhood romance that becomes largely irrelevant as the game moves on.
Quickly irrelevant. And so you don't really know what's going on, but by the end of it, it's all explained to you and it's kind of like, oh, that's interesting, but I wish a little bit more had been developed throughout and you kind of knew what was going on.
I mean, and there's even, you know, characters that we haven't even really mentioned, like Harley, the Harlequin character. Founds out she's a dragon too and all this crazy crap. But I mean, I kind of like that because it makes Chrono Cross its own game. And then it's kind of like this was tied into everything. Like it doesn't make it like the connection to Chrono Trigger so like much of a part of the game, which I think that's where a lot of the hate for the game comes from. Is the fact that people just wanted a sequel to Chrono Trigger, and instead they got this, like, the sequel to Chrono Trigger, but in an unlikely way.
Yeah.
Like, you're not using the same characters at all, although there is the rumor that the character of Guile is an amnesiac Magus.
Yeah.
Which was kind of legitimized by the fact that, once again, in Chrono Trigger DS, there's one of the endings insinuates that Magus, you know, becomes an amnesiac.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, you're not playing as those characters. You're in that world, but you're in that world far in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like this is an expanded universe game.
Yeah. Like
this is the equivalent of, like, Knights of the Old Republic to the Star Wars movies that we know and love.
Right. And more than any of that, though, I find that the hate comes from the fact that the characters... not only are they not present, which is one thing, but they basically, in completing, like, their task in Chrono Trigger, like, created this other future where things still go horribly wrong and, you know, and the Earth is in peril and, like, you know, it was basically, like, all their trouble was for naught and, like, that, you know, that even in changing the future, they just created a new future that wasn't happy. You know, it wasn't this happy ending, like, they did everything they needed to do and now everything was perfect and, I think that's where a lot of that comes from. You know, the characters are ghosts in this, and, you know, you basically, you watch or see, like, Robo get deleted after you know, late in the game, once it's revealed that he's the one who made Serge the Arbiter and all this stuff, and it just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a bold decision to, I don't know, make the characters not so omniscient, you know, from Chrono Trigger, and make it where they weren't perfect, and they still didn't prevent disaster.
So as people who have played Chrono Trigger, you guys look upon this favorably as a like a continuation of the series?
I don't know if I'd really say favorable. Well, I mean, as a...
acceptingly, like, maybe?
Well, I mean, my thing is that I really love both games. I think they're both very good games. They happen to take place in the same universe. I love the fact that, you know, what parts of Chrono Cross do, you know, they do have those characters, they do have those ties, those little teases and hints that, I mean, throughout the game, they don't really overtly tell you. You kind of need to, you know, do the math. Like, they're not just, like, you know, flashing on the screen, this is Robo. He was in the previous game. Remember him?
Right.
Isn't that weird? And that's something that I think some game sequels and movie sequels do, is that it's more just, you know, the reference is enough. And in Chrono Cross, I mean, I guess you could say that some of the things are just references, but it didn't beat you over the head with it. And I kind of enjoyed the fact that these two games can exist separately, although Chrono Cross's story would still make no sense. But for me, I really enjoyed how crazy and inane the story was at times, because, it kept me interested. It's much better than, I'm playing Tales of the Abyss, and while that's a fine game, it's like, I don't give a crap about the story. And as far as, the generic Japanese RPG, Chrono Cross was one of the few games that had, such an off-the-wall story that it kept me involved.
Yeah.
Like, everything else, it's like, it's either, the hero's a dick, and he learns to be a little better, or he doesn't remember anything. And it's not that Serge is this great hero, but it's almost like Serge, in the case of this game and the story, he's just like a person being used by other people. He's a tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's, much like how you as the player are using Serge as just, as an avatar, it's like so are the other characters in the story. And, that's something that I kind of enjoy because, the story isn't so much about what's Serge doing as what's going on in the world in general.
Yeah, it's all just like a repercussion of the other game, but still, being this singular thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, and Neil's 100% right. Like, the references aren't, out there. It's not in your face. It's there if you played Chrono Trigger, but if you haven't, it's not going to take away from your experience.
I played very little Chrono Trigger.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I don't have that prior affinity, and I'm still enjoying Chrono Cross so far.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It's weird to kind of, I have some points of reference for, events and characters and stuff like that, but I'm still very much enjoying the game on its own.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I wonder if you play Chrono Trigger after Chrono Cross, what your experience
It'll
will be
probably
like
end
doing
up that way, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to do another one of these segments after you play Chrono Trigger. In all honesty, I'm glad that, Scott, you decided to play Chrono Cross because while I was kind of hand-tied because my PS3 was broken for a while and I was not motivated enough to send it off to get repaired, it is a game that I look upon favorably, and I was thinking, around the time when you mentioned that on Twitter, I was like, man, I could totally replay that game. I really enjoyed that. And the same thing with Chrono Trigger, because I got the DS version, and I think I played an hour and a half of it. I lent it to a couple friends, so there was some benefit, but I barely played the DS version. I kind of want to go back to that. A friend of mine is still borrowing it, so
yeah,
I need to get it back from him first.
Yeah. So I love Chrono Trigger. I played it originally. I played the PS1 version. I played the DS version.
The PS1 version is so bad. Fucking bad.
So bad. But I still love it. I was a kid, and I liked the animated cutscenes.
Yeah,
so
I know.
That was enough.
When I had access to a PlayStation 1, as I mentioned before the show, I never owned... Well, I inherited a PlayStation 1. My brother owned a PlayStation 1. And what I did at some point was I would get... I got Final Fantasy 7. I got Final Fantasy 9. And I got the collection with Chrono Trigger on it, and I would when I'd get a chance, I would play his PlayStation and, play my RPGs that I wanted to on that, because that was at a time when I was really into that genre.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to play the Chrono Trigger thing, and then I was just like, screw this, and played it on an emulator on Super Nintendo emulator.
Yeah, it's so much better that way.
And then I eventually, when I got a Super Nintendo for the first time in 2003, it was early high school for me, which makes Nate feel young and Scott feel old, most likely.
I was a junior then, so not that old.
Yeah, but I got it in the beginning of high school, and I wound up, Chrono Trigger was one of the few games that I shelled out, $30+. I think I got it for $40, including shipping off of eBay, which I wish I got Earthbound instead, because Earthbound back then was about $50, and now it's only skyrocketing in price. Whereas Chrono Trigger, I could have gotten on DS, Virtual Console, or pretty much everything at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think my logic at the time was, well, Earthbound's a Nintendo game. They'll re-release it.
Yeah, of course. Who would have known? To kind of close out, and then we'll read this email that we got, but the only scene in Chrono Cross that really, made me sad for Chrono Trigger and, the characters is near the end when Kid is in a coma and you're trying to get her out of it. And you're in this scene now in the burning orphanage, which Lupo is running.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's kids there that you're rescuing, and then there's a point where you go down a hallway, and there's actually, like, drawings, like crayon drawings that the kids had done of the different heroes from Chrono Trigger, because obviously, you know, they were all friends still, and so those people obviously came back to kind of help out at the orphanage. And so, like, and then when you click on them, it'll actually bring up the hand-drawn pictures, and it's pretty cool and just cute and just sad. And so you get, like, pictures of Frog and Chrono and Marl and all that stuff, and yeah, it's just kind of sad. And then when you go into battles throughout that hallway, like when the camera zooms into the battles, it like cuts through the hallway and you see all those pictures again, and it's just kind of like,
yeah, I mean, that was
kind of cool.
Once again, a really effective way of referencing the old game but making it subtle.
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember that. I mean, well, you know, to jog my memory a little bit with the Burning Orphanage, but when you said that, I'm like, oh yeah, the crayon drawings.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very poignant scene, especially if you're a fan of Chrono Trigger.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, so I appreciate it. I don't view it as like a direct sequel, but just like a cool spin-off idea. And I like what they did and with the world and stuff, and that it just made the heroes of Chrono Trigger, not infallible, which I appreciate. You know, that there was no real changing the future. You know, they changed one, but they just made a new one. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like that. But let's read an email. It kind of ties into that.
Right before we get there, I just want to make the comment about that. Maybe that was the intention of this game, was to make it so, you know, Chrono Trigger wasn't seen as this infallible game that was perfect. And maybe it was a sly attempt by Square Enix and the people working on this game to just be like, hey, you know, a Chrono Trigger game was pretty good, but guys, you know, those heroes aren't perfect. Like, Frog messed up. He was kind of a dick. Like,
right. Oh. This is kind of them, like, trolling a little bit. Like, you know, they probably received countless letters and emails saying, like, give us a Chrono Trigger sequel, so this is what you got. Like,
yeah.
This sort of sad and somber story. But here's the email from Kasaki Project. He writes, I think Chrono Cross is wonderful and given a bad rap by Trigger fanboys. Basically, it's a unique and darkly compelling story. It was particularly unique and compelling for a late 90s JRPG. I mean, everything bad in the universe was Surge's fault. That's a pretty unique protagonist. The character stories were dark and tragic. Harley Quinn's story was sad. The game made her quite a compelling enigma and then ended it in a sad way. Surge and Kid's love story was particularly unfortunate. The game managed, with the help of the excellent score by Mitsuda, to create a constant sense of sorrow, longing, and melancholy. This wasn't a particularly common theme at the time. It's an excellent game, but people go into it expecting happy and good times. Instead, they get Greek tragedy.
I agree with that. I think having like the theme of consequence throughout is a really effective means of storytelling.
Right. For sure. Yeah, I 100% agree with that, and I think that's really well said. So good job, Kasaki Project.
Yeah, and I guess going back to, I felt like looking up what a, I'll try to pronounce it right. If someone wants to write in with a phonetic correct pronunciation of Masato Kato,
mm-hmm.
Kato, I don't know. I'm not good with the Japanese.
Actually, Neil, it's.
Do you actually know? I'm curious.
No, I don't.
Yeah. But he was the director, scenario, and scriptwriter, event planner, and FMV storyboard guy for Chrono Cross. He was also the story planner and scriptwriter for Chrono Trigger. So, I mean, if you think about it, this was the guy who came up with the story for Chrono Trigger, and then he made the story for Chrono Cross as the sequel for it.
So that's true. So I mean, his characters.
Yeah,
so.
it came from a legit source. But I also feel it's notable to mention what else this guy worked on. Before Chrono Trigger, he worked on all three Ninja Gaiden NES games.
Weird.
It's at least just looking on his Wikipedia page, which may or may not be accurate. It said he just worked on I guess like the art on Ninja Gaiden 1, but then he directed the cinema scenes for 2 and 3. And I mean, considering that Ninja Gaiden 3 is also batshit crazy, and Ninja Gaiden 2, you know, is a little more grounded, I can see some kind of comparison between Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross to Ninja Gaiden 2 and 3 on the NES.
There you go.
And he also, he worked on Radical Dreamers, which, you know, makes sense. He was also the event planner and scriptwriter for Final Fantasy VII, Xenogears, and he also worked a lot on Final Fantasy XI. And even going farther down the list, he worked on Biden Kaidos, a lot of mana games, when there was a bunch of mana games coming out randomly in the mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Sands of Destruction, a Sega-published DS game that supposedly, I think there's some time elements in that, so it, people compared the story a little bit to Chrono Trigger. And then he also worked on Shirin the Wanderer on Wii, and he's currently working on Ninja Gaiden 3. So he's going back to the well in that one.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Probably no one cares except for me, but I thought that was pretty interesting.
So, yeah, I think that'll about do it. Closing thoughts, guys?
If you've never played Chrono Cross before, I highly recommend it. If you have a PlayStation 3, it is $10 on PSN and totally worth it. If you like RPGs, like Chrono Trigger, I mean, it is the kind of thing. It reminds me slightly of a comment I made in the NeoGAF thread for Dylan's Rolling Western, where someone asked if it was worth $10, and despite the fact that I don't like that game at all, I said yes, because it's either you're going to really like it and that's cool, or you're going to agree with me and hate it. So, it's either you're going to really like this game and agree with me, or you're going to hate it. And that's okay. You're just wrong.
Nate, I know you're not very, you're still making your way through it, but anything
no,
to
I'm
closing?
Very much sold on it now after this discussion. I'm going to see it all the way through.
Perfect. And yeah, I would agree with Neil. If you're a Chrono Trigger fan and you haven't played this and you've heard bad things, you know, it's easily available now if you have a PS3. I'd say definitely give it a look. It's interesting. And if you can just kind of put your trigger love aside, it's a very, just sort of courageous and bold idea for the franchise.
Yeah. And it even has a bunch of multiple endings that you can get in New Game Plus, which is a series staple for all two games.
Although in this one, you can hold down the right trigger and it, speeds up the gameplay.
Oh,
so
really?
So you can play the game again and get through it that much faster. And your character's even strong still. You know, your same level and stuff. So not only are you doing more damage, but you're fast forwarding through everything.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, you can get through the game again in like less than 10 hours. So there you go. So, all right. Well, thanks guys for joining me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we'll see you guys later.
If you guys want us to talk about Chrono Cross again, I'd totally do it.
Yeah. Just let us know.
Bye.
Bye.